thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's a living.
Here's John Williams.
We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. This is John. Lord have mercy. And we're here today until 2 o'clock. We'll be here until 2 at 2:05. It's first pitch of sunny Arizona White Sox baseball. Yeah, that's right. We're going to do that again. We're going to bring you more warmth and sunshine. White Sox baseball here on WGN Radio as the White Sox take on somebody. It really doesn't matter. It's exhibition preseason baseball. The nice thing is it's baseball. It's going to be on the radio, and it's going to be about 75 degrees there. If you like listening to our full show, we invite you to join us online. We'll continue to do what we're doing here. We'll do it on the stream, kids. That's real simple. Just go to WGNradio.com and click on the listen button, and you'll continue to hear the tones of, well, let's see, Jen DeSalvo is over in traffic. Steve Bertrand is sitting into the news chair. I'll be here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And if you go to the website, you can also look at us.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't know that that's going to help, but I mean, you're lovely.
For the four voyeurs that are out there.
You posted a wonderful picture of you with a chocolate dough. Was that a putschke on your face?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're giving up sweets for Lent, and there was the last sweet right on your nose.
Yep.
It was a lovely picture.
Well, thank you. Putschke the size of my face.
I saw an article and didn't read it because I should have, but it had the spelling of punchki, mm-hmm. and then said, how do you pronounce it? It doesn't matter, something like that. Is it like a soft N in there, punchki?
Yeah, like P-O-O-N-C-H-K-I.
Punchki.
Or K-E-E.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Punchki.
It's such a tradition in Chicago, and I love that. I love a lot of these traditions. I'm not a fan of those foods. I've always been disappointed by them. There's just too much going on there for me, but that's just me. It's a wonderful thing. So what are we going to do then in the hour that we are here and then in the hour that we aren't here? That is, that we'll be just on the stream. We'll talk a little bit about the deficit and what it means. You know, as much as we get caught up into Donald Trump hide his high school grades and all of that silliness, the trade deficit is now at a record high. We're approaching $900 billion. Some of those are a direct result of Trump's policies, but by no stretch all. Part of the reason that we have such a trade deficit in this country right now, say with China, is because of things that the president cannot control. So let's just at least spend some time on that topic, and we will in our 2 o'clock hour. Steve Gadlin will join us in the 2 o'clock hour on the stream, too. Oh, what a story he has to tell. Bill and Wendy were talking the other day about people that will call you and try and scam you on credit cards or taxes. There's nobody who has ever scammed the scammer better than Chicago's Steve Gadlin. And the story has to tell about how then when the guy reached out to him to try and trick him out of giving him money, Gadlin then writes back to the guy and they start going back and forth to the point that, and I don't remember exactly all the details, but I'm telling you, you'll hear this story on the stream in the 2 o'clock hour. Gadlin and the guy strike up such a correspondence, really a friendship, that Gadlin gets the other guy to write him a musical, a play, and then they performed it here in Chicago. That's 78% accuracy on that. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I know that there was a show produced, and I know the guy wrote it. I guess I'm right. That's what I just said. But the details on that are a little lost on me, so Steve's going to say hi to us a little after 2 o'clock and talk about that. I'm not real good with names. A lot of times when I have a guest in the studio or on the phone, as I say hello to them, even the second time after we've been engaged in a conversation, I'll find myself looking at the piece of paper and I'll say, oh, hello, Donna Andrews. And then when I turn to Donna Andrews again, I'll just kind of look over there and make sure it's Donna Andrews. Donna will be joining us a little after 1:30. She's that teacher in Georgia who read her insurance contract and it had a contest embedded in it and she won $10,000. What happened there after 1:35? But back to names. I have sympathy for people who get names wrong or conflate stories. I have a few examples of this happening. This was on Fox News the other day. They were talking about the, there's the two stories. And in this case, they were talking about the R. Kelly story and the interview that Gayle King did. So this is the gang sitting around talking about that.
And taking no ability for himself I agree. Hats off to Gayle King for totally redeeming herself after the Smollett fiasco. Oh.
Jedediah, you know...
That was not Gayle King.
Oh, I knew that.
Robin Roberts did the Smollett
interview. Robin Roberts.
Yeah.
Jedediah, one of the things that I think lots of people...
Sorry
are...
for Robin Roberts out there.
Just go right ahead, Jesse.
Crawl under a rock when that happens, don't you? Ah! And as that's happening, you know that's just going to go out there and all the comics are going to have their day with it and so on and so forth. That wasn't getting a name wrong, though. That was not knowing your stuff. I mean, that was just, that was not getting a name wrong. The president got a name wrong the other day. You know, he had a bunch of business leaders and he's doing this America Forward business symposium at the White House. And he's sitting next to Tim Cook from Apple.
I used to say, Tim, you got to start doing it over here. And you really have. I mean, you've really... put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple. But we're opening it up.
Tim Apple. But, you know, if he had put a comma in there, he could have said Tim Apple. It would be like Steve Bertrand, WGN. Steve WGN. That doesn't sound bad. We know Steve's name isn't Steve WGN, but he said Steve WGN. That's giving the president more credit than he's due there. He just sort of smushed the company into the person's name. And nobody made him, nobody, Ivanka was sitting on one side, Tim Cook was sitting on the other, and nobody made a face. Nobody said, oh, Mr. President, you got that wrong. Looks like we've all been to these places, we've all done this sort of thing. So I Googled wrong names just to see what else pops up. I was looking for other examples. And the Key and Peele skit comes up from comedy. I don't think this was on SNL. I'm sure it wasn't because it's too profane. I had to edit it. It must have been on the Comedy Central channel, right? But the guy comes in. He's an African-American. He's a substitute teacher. And he tells the all-white class that he is now their substitute teacher for the day and he's about to do roll call. This isn't so much about getting names wrong as it is the difference between names in a, say, white suburban school and names in an inner city school. But when you start to go down this rabbit hole, as I did today, you come up with a skit like this.
All right, listen up, y'all. I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. I taught school for 20 years in the inner city, so don't even think about messing with me. Y'all feel me? Let's take a roll here. Jay Quellen. Where's Jay Quellen at? No Jay Quellen here?
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay, so that's how it's gonna be. Y'all wanna play. Okay, then. I've got my eye on you, Jay Quellen. Balake. Where is Balake at? Yes, sir.
My name's Blake.
Do you wanna go to war, Balake?
No.
Because we could go to war.
No.
I'm for real. So you better check yourself. D nice.
Well, Jen, what name was D nice? When he says D nice, what name was it really? It was...
Denise.
And then, oh man, he loses his stuff over that. Because he knows these kids are just playing with him with the funny pronunciations. It's a double reverse whammy. It's a very funny bit. Very funny bit.
Yeah.
So all of that made me think... This is just me furthering my little trip down the rabbit hole of getting names right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Was the SNL skit with, let me see if I get the names right, Cecily, John Hader, Bill Hader and John Mulaney. I'm terrible with names, right? But they did a skit called What's Your Name?
Welcome to What's That Name? The rules are simple. We show you a person, you tell us their name. Our contestants today are Doug and Courtney. The first question goes to Doug. John Legend is one of pop music's biggest artists, but his better half is a star in her own right. Doug, what's that name? Chrissy Teigen. That's right. $5 for you. Courtney, you're up next. Although they recently split, we'll never forget the whirlwind romance of Noah Cyrus and this American musician. What's that name?
Okay, I actually know this. It's Lil Xan.
That's right. $5 to you. All right. Doug. This next question is for $250,000. And we've got a walk-on clue.
Hey, Doug.
Me? I'm one of your closest friends.
Hey, Todd.
And I've been his girlfriend for 4 years. What's my name?
Hey, great to see you.
It's great to see you. We've gone out to dinner 20 times and sat next to each other at multiple weddings. What's my name?
It's Missy.
Audience.
What kind of horrible game show is this?
It's What's That Name?
The audience said, Karen. They knew it was Karen. It wasn't Missy. And then it goes on and on and on. But that was the thrust of it. Very funny. Quick show of hands. Been there, done that?
Yeah. I am so bad with people's names. And there are people, there are specific people whose names I forever don't remember.
I know. Why is that, that some names are harder to remember than others?
There's this one guy named Tom that I always want to call Dave. And I get it so confused that I'm still not, I'm sure it's Tom, but I will see him this afternoon and it will be hard for me not to say Dave.
You're going to have to make sure you get it right. You know that's a speed bump there,
right,
mentally for
and
you.
And so that's why I almost never use people's names because I have no confidence. And so then when I do, I'm overly confident and I'm usually wrong.
Well, isn't that why Willie Mays was called the Say Hey Kid?
Say Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Probably, I don't know.
He was young, he went up to the majors, everybody knew Willie Mays. Willie Mays didn't know everybody, so he would just say, hey, and he became the Say Hey Kid because he didn't know everybody's name. I don't know if he didn't remember people's names down the road, like maybe you and me, or he was just so new, but he was the Say Hey Kid because of that. Yeah, I don't know if you've been to a story like this, and I don't know, Steve, if it's... I don't know if there's certain categories of people in our lives that are hard to remember. And here's what I also do. I'll work so hard sometimes on remembering a name, say, that I almost make it too difficult for myself. I come up with all of these sort of, you know, memory helpers and all of this infrastructure that I need to come in whenever I see this person. And then I'm trying to remember all of that, which is somehow going to help me remember their name. And I get confused.
You're supposed to, like, say it, I don't know, 7 times before you remember or something? Like, John, 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 John.
Do you do that? So if you're trying to remember a name, do you out loud or to yourself do that?
Oh, yeah, and I look like a total weirdo.
Well, I think you're also...
I think my choice would be just not to call anyone by name.
But aren't you supposed to do what I try and do for the phone numbers for some of our clients here? You're supposed to take the name and put it into a story or visualize it in a way, like if the person's name was Jen, then when I see you, I need to see your face in the shape of a letter J, and then the J, you know, that kind of thing.
See, and that makes me feel badly about myself because I don't care about it to try that hard. I mean, I really mean it. I, you know, if when I meet you, I'm gonna. I mean, I might sometimes repeat your name.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to play any games in my head to remember it.
But see,
that makes me shallow.
Well, that's the thing that troubles me the most. I don't know if it's because I'm stupid or I have dementia or I'm just a bad person and I don't care enough.
Right. So people
to
say,
know.
Well, here's the trick I do. When I hear someone's name, boom, I'm done.
So. And if you said, hi, I'm Steve and this is my wife, Sharon. I've already forgotten your wife's name.
Yeah.
It's like, it just doesn't even stick.
Oh, see,
it happens so fast for me.
I don't remember men's names. When I meet a couple, I always remember the female, and I never remember the male, which could end up being beneficial because, you know, sometimes women don't like if you remember their husband's name before.
Oh, yeah,
them.
I get that. I get that.
But, yeah, or if I'm meeting a woman and her dog, I purposely always remember the dog's name first.
Because you like dogs more than people.
No, that's you, Steve.
So... the second time I introduced my girlfriend Sharon to my extended family,
yeah, mm-hmm,
the woman I would marry,
sure,
we were down for an Easter, and so it was my dad and his brothers and sisters and maybe 60 people in the room. That she had been with the family at Christmas, and now it's Easter. And I walk in, I'm like, hey, everybody. I said, you all remember Karen? Karen, this is everybody.
Oh, no.
And all of my aunts just looked at me like,
wah, wah.
Yeah, and I was dating the woman at the time. I knew what her name was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
124-312-981-7200. Any tips for us? Let's take a couple quick calls here. Hey, Brian, jump in there. You're on WGN. What's up?
Hey, John. You keep referencing that changing names and trying to remember stuff. That's Kevin Trudeau. About 10 years ago, he was with Danny Bonaducci, and I'm going to amend what I told Ellis, but he got in serious trouble over that mega memory as a fraud thing. Just wanted to throw that out to
Wait
you.
A minute. So these schemes I'm talking about, which he promoted, are now, in fact, known to be not true?
The way that he went about it was kind of iffy. I mean, if it works for you,
yeah, right.
So be it.
Yeah, it doesn't, but, so that's good to know.
Yes.
Well, maybe that explains everything. Brian, I'm going. Thank you for the phone call. I'm going from you to Tony. Tony, you're on WGN. What do you want to say, Tony? You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, I was just thinking when you were telling that story, when I first met my now ex-wife, she was from Denmark, and she had an interesting name, and for the longest first couple months that we knew her, she was Denmark Girl, because I couldn't remember the name, and then her name was Mai, so eventually it just became My Friend, and that was the way I kept having to remember what her name was My Friend Mai, so it's months before I actually remembered her name.
Yeah, but
because it was just kind of so off the wall that was the name.
Yeah, but when you said, all right, so she's got some Danish name, and I thought it was going to be one of these multi-syllabic, impossible-to-pronounce things. It was Mai?
It was just Mai, which in my head threw me off so much that it would just be like, I could never remember that as a name. So then it was always like, My Friend was the way I had to remember
her name
was Mai.
Yeah, well, hey, whatever works. Tony, funny, thanks for the call.
Yep, thank you.
Easy for me to say funny, right? I don't know if Mai appreciated that. Ellis says take a break. Brian has a reverse tip on names that you don't want to remember. We posted a News Click, a daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. Yesterday we asked, Hillary says she's not running. You had two options, good, we don't need the headache, or B, not good, I wish she would try again. How do you think that went down? What percent said what?
I would say 68% said we don't need the headache.
68%, 83%, the majority said good, we don't need the headache. 17%, and I just think in that 83% are people like me who voted for, might have voted for again, you know, if it were her and the incumbent, but still just would prefer a different candidate.
I mean, you know, I said that 4 years ago when she announced that it was going to be exhausting just because of all of the stuff.
Well, and she was just so unpopular, at least last time. I don't know if that's changed in people's minds.
Yeah, but I mean, but she was popular. She won. She won the popular vote.
Yeah, well, that's not how it works, though, Steve.
No. She didn't win the election. She won the popular vote.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that there's just so much fatigue that comes with the people who hate her that it just gets it wears you down.
To the degree that I don't know why people run, period. Right? Like, do you think maybe J.B. Pritzker gets up and clicks his heels every day and go, oh, good, I get to do that now. Maybe Lori Lightfoot really thinks that'll be fun.
Or John, just Tony because Kirkland. You don't want to make the world a better place doesn't mean other people don't.
A, if I thought I could, I would. But really, do you think Pritzker or Lightfoot or Preckwinkle or Trump or Clinton can just make it better with the force of their personality or the level of their intelligence? I guess that's why anybody runs, and sometimes that works. It helps, but boy, some of the hills seem so high. I think, you know, it's not worth it, particularly what we put these people through. That's the point, right? What do we put these people through?
Right.
Anyway, so 83% of you said, good, we don't need the headache. Hillary, if you're listening. By the way, real quick here, I want to talk to this woman.
It's the most popular thing she's ever done.
Not run, yeah. In fact, I like that so much, I wish she'd run. Okay, I want to talk to a teacher in the South who found something on an insurance policy that made her $10,000 in a minute. Our last call about names that we do and don't remember, Brian wanted to say something about that. There's a few stories in the news this week about people, the president, Fox News, John Williams, a skit on Saturday Night Live, people getting names wrong or not remembering them. We've been talking about that. Hey, Brian, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hey, good afternoon, John. Real quick, I live in the northwest suburbs, and for years we've been frequenting a big box home improvement store.
Yeah.
And there was a young lady that worked there in the paint department, and I coached football, softball, baseball, and everything with every other male parent in the neighborhood. And she was quite attractive, but nobody knew her name, so we all referred to her as the paint girl.
Got it.
So push came to shove, I went to, and my kids started going to college. You need to get a second job. So I worked nights at that store, and I was just devastated by when my coworkers said, they told me your name. I go, well, no, we can't know her name. And then the other guys I coached with in the neighborhood, and all the wives knew who this person was too, because why are you guys always going to the hardware store? So we all were trying to forget her name. So they're all telling me, do not tell us her name. She's the paint girl. We don't want to know her real name. And how creepy as it sounds, it's just kind of funny. But
why did they not want to know her name?
Because she's the paint girl.
I don't know that that helps me. So, I mean, is it because...
I'm sure it doesn't. It doesn't help any of us in any regard. But it's, obviously twisted, but, funny nevertheless, at least to us. But.
Buddy of mine said when he was picking teams for Little League... He said that,
I know right where you're going. Once you get down to the bottom of the barrel, and that's horrible to sound about talent, you start picking by moms, right?
I'm going to hang up now, Brian. I sure appreciate your phone call.
All right, John. Thanks. Bye-bye.
So Donald and Andrews is on a phone line. Let me see if I have this story right. The headline says, teacher wins $10,000 in contest buried in insurance policy small print. A teacher won a $10,000 prize after spotting a contest hidden in the small print of her insurance policy. Donnellan is a teacher from Thomaston, Georgia. She bought travel insurance for a trip, a planned vacation to London with friends, which is funny because I'm in this very boat right now. I'm going on the Steve Bertrand trip to London, and then we'll go to Edinburgh, Scotland. I think that was her plan. She read the insurance policy, maybe that I've had before me before. Hey, Donnellan, this is John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
Really well. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a fun ride this week.
So when is the trip?
The trip is in September.
And you're going to London? Are you going to Scotland as well?
I'm going to Scotland in June to celebrate my retirement from teaching after 25 years, and my husband and I will be celebrating our 35th wedding anniversary.
Ah, so two different trips. Which one was the one that you were looking at the insurance policy on?
The one to London in September.
All right. And so you're looking at this thing, and what were you doing? What happened?
I purchased the trip insurance through this company after comparing several others on the website, and I printed, they sent me a confirmation and a contract, and I printed both out, and, we're putting them both in my trusty folder, because I'm one of those nerds that has folders on everything, to keep everything together, and I sat down to read through not only the confirmation sheet with all the information, but the 7-page contract. And as I got to the 7th page, which, by the way, it was very easy to read. It wasn't one of those types of contracts full of legalese and words nobody knows what they mean. It was very easy to read in short paragraphs. Mm-hmm. But on the last page, in bold print, it said pays to read. And in the following paragraph, it basically said, if you've read this far in a contract, you're only, 1% of people who actually read contracts. And our company wants to change that by running a contest. And the first person to get this far and email us your name and telephone number wins $10,000. Of course, it got my attention. So I thought, well, somebody has to win. So I sent in the email. And guess what? They called me the next day. It was fabulous.
I wonder how long that contract had been out there. How many people had had it before you?
Well, according to the data that they published, the contest had been going on for 23 hours. They expected it to go up to a year, but in the first 23 hours, 73 people had purchased trip insurance on their website, and I was the only one who had read through it to see the contest at the end.
They're probably very happy and also a little probably frustrated because 1 in 73 makes the point, but it might be 1 in 1,000. It might be 1 in 10,000, but their luck, you happen to come along right out of the get-go.
Exactly. Yeah. And the funny thing is, the reason, you know, I know it sounds a little early to buy trip insurance in February for a trip in September, but the reason I wanted to jump on it was because right now, as of February 11th, I was 59 years old. And I knew in the back of my mind that once I turned 60, 1 month later, the price would probably go up. And on the website, they wanted to know how old you are today.
Oh.
And so I wanted to be able to put in 59. And so that's why I kind of jumped on it. Once we booked the trip, I wanted to just go ahead and get it out of the way and hopefully get a little better price because I was still 59.
I'm going to London and Scotland this spring, and I haven't bought my insurance yet. Maybe I should. What company did you use?
Squaremouth is the main company, but the company that they own where I bought this trip insurance goes by the name of Tin Leg, T-I-N-L-E-G, two words.
Yeah, Tin Leg. Uh-huh. What's by the way, just a little travel talk here. What's travel insurance run you? Is that a function of the price? How much is your trip and how much is your insurance?
Well, they ask questions. They want to know where you're going, when you're going there, how much the trip costs, and what your age is. And those four variables determine the price.
So can you give me a ballpark on what that's going to run?
Well, the trip was a little over $7,200 that included airfare, and the trip insurance was a little over $450 for everything that I wanted.
Yeah, right. So then the phone rings. I wonder if you thought that was a scam, because there's a lot of scams going on right now. You know, do they ask for a routing number, your checking account, that sort of thing?
Well, they called me back the next day, and I answered the phone. And when they started, you know, talking to me, my initial reaction was, oh, this is a scam. But then I realized, no, it can't be, because I contacted them to start with. I entered this. And once they called and spoke with me, they wanted to call me back the next day after they had sent me an email. So that night, before I spoke with them again the next day, I went online and totally stalked them. And this company, Squaremouth, out of St. Pete, Florida, is very well thought of, has great, you know, ratings. And then I also, the PR director, Jenna Hummer, I Googled her and kind of stalked her Facebook and Instagram and realized, you know, these are real people. So when they called back the next day and wanted, you know, my address.
Right.
And that kind of thing, I was very happy to provide them with that. But I did check it out. I'm still a very careful person.
I'd hate if I heard the next week, you know that lady that won the $10,000? Well, she just lost $100,000. They raided her account. It's terrible.
Right.
Well, do you have the money yet? Do you got the cash?
I do. Yeah.
So the $10,000 trip is more than paid for, isn't it?
Exactly. That will pay for our Scotland trip.
Yeah, right.
It's so about pay for our Scotland trip.
If it's $7,000, you got $10,000. That's a pretty good deal. Well, now I'm going to go look at my insurance policy and see if there's anything in there. But I'm going to guess not. Well, good for them. You know, that's nice for you. They've got more than $10,000 worth of free advertising out of this. Everybody kind of wins in this case.
Right. But in addition to the $10,000 they gave me, they also donated $10,000 to a nonprofit by the name of Reading is Fundamental. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have.
But they provide, you know, books and things for school libraries and things. And then after they interviewed me over the phone and realized I am a teacher, a high school teacher, they, on their own added another $10,000, $5,000 for each high school where I work, to donate to their library. And so those librarians are my new best friends. You better believe it.
So let's hear it for Squaremouth and Tin Leg, and let's hear it for you. Last question. Are there any tips that you picked up in reading that policy, things that travelers should know?
Well, definitely make sure when you're traveling abroad outside the United States that you have enough medical coverage to take care of any need you may have. And in this particular case, I just added $1 and was able to double the repatriation amount from $250,000 to $500,000. You know, the thought of getting hurt somewhere remote and then not being able to get airlifted out and back home is kind of frightening.
Yeah.
So I wanted that. I just added $1 and it doubled that amount. And so I, you know, that was definitely worth it for my peace of mind for sure.
I've heard stories in my travels, people will be on a cruise ship and they get ill and either they can't get fixed or they want to get fixed back in the United States. They need to be transported back to the United States. Sometimes they need a helicopter or some sort of private transportation. That can cost $50,000.
So you
travel at your own risk, but you need to know that. Well, listen, Donalyn, you've been you've been a bright spot for us today. Thank you for your time and congratulations once again.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
This text poured in from our conversation earlier about remembering names, and somebody said that was Kevin Trudeau's mnemonic device program where you remember names. And the guy said, "Yeah, John, but he got in trouble." I assume that that was trouble because his scheme didn't work to remember names. But this texter said, "King John, I think Trudeau got in trouble for something else. False claims for a weight loss program or something else. Whatever works, works." This is the story.
Oh, yeah. Remember he was in and out of jail. And
Yeah, this is ringing a bell. But, Steve, it's funny. I don't really remember the details of that well. Maybe I should have a memory device for people who are trying to teach me about memory. It's 1:53, so in 6 minutes and 47 seconds to be exact, I'll pause and you'll hear White Sox baseball here on WGN Radio. We'll continue our conversation, including Steve's news at 2 o'clock, but that will be heard at WGNRadio.com, on the stream, as we say. So continue to listen to us, Jen and Kevin and Elif and Steve and I will all be here from 2 to 3 o'clock doing the show at WGNRadio.com. There's a Listen Now button right there. Or you can listen to White Sox Baseball, which you will hear here on WGN Radio starting at 2. From sunny Arizona, as the White Sox take on somebody.
You know, we got a question through text message.
Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, the Brewers. Well, that'll be interesting. Whatever. Whatever. What were you going to say, Jen?
If the stream plays through the A word, that Amazon Echo, I didn't want to start setting everybody's off.
That messes everybody nuts.
If the stream goes through there, or if that's the terrestrial broadcast, because people were wanting to know if they can listen that way.
I don't think you will. I think you'll hear us on the stream, not baseball.
Okay.
Through your device, you'll hear us, not baseball.
That's what they wanted.
Estimated probability of accuracy of that, 54%. So not real high, but Elif has given me the thumbs up saying that's true.
Awesome.
My story about the helicopter from the lady at Parkland in a minute. Visit by the Yards grand opening event in Yorktown Center March 8th through the 10th to see why By the Yard has been viewed as the premier maintenance-free outdoor furniture company. They're celebrating their new location by offering their best promotion ever. Save on furniture, get free delivery, and By the Yard will assemble that furniture at no extra charge when you're in their local delivery area. Shop their Yorktown or Vernon Hills locations for 3 days only for this special. March 8th through the 10th, request a catalog at buytheyard.net today. So I read that book, Parkland. We visited with the author of it, and he was just telling us, well, I don't know that he was telling us, but in the book early on, they described the shooting that took place at Parkland High School in Florida. And one of the mothers of one of the kids that was in the school, who was not shot, but at first she doesn't know this, she's on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. And she gets the news. Somebody calls her and they say, "Did you hear what happened on the ship at Parkland?" And she says, "No, what?" And they said, "There's been a mass shooting there." And she just says, "No, no, no." And she collapses on the floor. It's the worst possible feeling, not knowing And whatever the outcome of your child's disposition is, you can't get there. You're on this dang cruise ship. And eventually she got there, but only after the cruise was over. She didn't have the insurance. She didn't have the resources. She wasn't even sure how she was going to get from a little island or someplace on the journey back to Florida. So she finished the trip. And it was the most bizarre thing because everybody's having cocktails and they're at the pool. And your son survived the Parkland shooting. When she walked in the door finally, it was her house that the students went to. Hogg and Hernandez and the rest of those kids, the student activists, they were using her home as like ground central. They were eating there, sleeping there, they were working there, and they were setting up this movement to do something about gun laws in America. And she walks into like what would look like election central. The place was just going crazy. Kids all doing the work they were doing. The strangest thing, she didn't have insurance and she couldn't get off that trip.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
It's 11.
Here's John Williams.
Even on the stream. Mm-mm. Hey, thanks for finding us here at WGNRadio.com. You know we're here all the time. And we're on WGN Radio most of the time. We're not on WGN Radio right now. You're listening to us at WGNRadio.com. You want to hear some White Sox baseball? It's sunny in Arizona. Go there right now and you can listen to WGN.
Steve, I got an offer that you won't believe. For the low, low price of just 10 grand, you get a quarter of my company, you understand?
Oh my gosh.
You go to my site.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
I draw it, I mail it, it's as easy as that. I'd invest if I were you, and I want to draw a cat for you.
That's from the Steve Gadlin pitch to the Sharks on Shark Tank, the TV show.
I'll draw you a cat with a pork pie hat.
Yeah, he drew cats.
Yep. I follow him on Instagram, so I get to see all of his current cat drawings.
He's going to join us in 2 seconds. By the way, Kevin over in sports, any score in the White Sox game? Speaking of that, if Kevin's talking, we don't hear
Kevin's
CD
talking, Kevin. But yeah, you don't hear him.
Okay.
And you want to know the White Sox score?
Yeah, I'm sure there's
well,
not
I mean,
one.
I think there have been maybe three pitchers thrown in the game so far, but I've got...
What do you got?
No score.
Yeah.
Two outs in the top of the first.
Yeah, they just started. Well, we'll get Kevin's microphone turned on, and we'll continue with him in a little bit. Let's talk to that guy, Steve Gadlin. Steve is the guy who used to or still does draw cats for you. Hi, Steve.
Hey.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Good. Do you still draw cats for a living or a side hustle?
As a side hustle, I do. I started up again after a much publicized retirement, John. I'm actually back in the business again.
That's funny because, when I Googled you just to sort of reconnect and see what you're up to, I saw a lot of stories about you quitting the cat drawing gig, but it started back up again, huh?
It's one of those businesses that just pulls you right back in. It's tough to quit, you know? I found a way to do it on an iPad without having to keep a Sharpie supply or a postage supply, and it's been a lot of fun to get back into it.
Oh, really? You have software on your pad that enables you to do this now and then print from your pad?
Oh, I don't even need to print. I just email it or post it on Instagram.
I don't know.
John. It's a whole new market.
Is that a discount, Steve, if we don't get an actual hand-drawn?
It seemed to me like I'm paying for you with a Sharpie in
there. How do you put an iPad in a frame on your bedroom wall?
Yeah, I don't think this is for real.
Well, you can print out your drawing, and you can put it in a frame, and it's still numbered and signed. And, that's exactly what I thought, but the orders that just keep coming in. So,
seriously.
People dig it. Yeah.
Is it still $9.95 or something like that?
You got it, $9.95.
And how many are you doing these days?
Valentine's Day was very good, so I've probably done a few hundred in the last few weeks.
Really?
Up to about 20,340 something total.
Hold on a second. 20,000 times.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Times, what did we say it was? $10.
It was $29.95 for a while because I was trying to slow down the demand by raising the price. but it didn't help.
Do you do anything else besides draw cats?
Believe it or not, I parent and I have a day job. So, I do all sorts of stuff.
You're a superhero,
That's why
Steve.
I had to retire.
He works for a major American consumer electronic corporation. He's got an operation in Chicago, and he's on the software side, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you still do Star Makers?
Say that again?
No, Star Makers. So our cable access show is not happening right now. We kind of lost our access to a studio. But I have a bunch of other little side projects. You know, some of us, those of us who have to work in offices every day, need these creative explosions. We've got to find a way to entertain ourselves.
So,
right?
John, I think I told you the last time I heard from Steve, he was eavesdropping on me at my health club.
Yeah, you
oh,
did.
That's right. I will.
Finish that story, well, Bertrand.
You finish it, Steve.
Well, I happened to hear him, a voice that was so familiar to me in the locker room at the gym I go to, and it turns out it was indeed Steve Bertrand.
But he does it. He texted me or sends me a Facebook message because he said, I didn't want to walk around the corner and see you in a towel.
Or less, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of funny. How I picture him when I hear him on the radio, you know.
I briefly shared a moment of nudity with our former general manager here in the showers at the gym at the old Tribune Tower, and I thought, well, that's a level of employee-employer intimacy that I wasn't ready for, but, you know, we're all guys here, it's a locker room, and this is fine. It's fine. It's fine. There's no problem. So you drew cats for a living. Mark Cuban, this is all just a tangent to the reason I called you,
sure,
Steve.
Sure.
But it's all it still is just such a fun story, your life and your side hustles. The
sure.
Mark Cuban then on the TV show Shark Tank invested in your company. What percentage of your company did he own?
He owned a third of the stick figure cat drawing business for $25,000. And he made his money back and then he divested. So he was in and then he was out.
Did he make more than $25K?
Probably.
I mean, that's he didn't.
To, you know,
how was he getting paid?
I'd have to send him checks.
Really?
Yeah.
So he gives you $25,000. You amp up your business, and being on the show was I'm sure that helped your business, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was the business.
And so were those hard checks to write or easy checks to write?
Well, the first one was really hard because I thought I was the victim of a hustle. I thought, wait a second, this is all a scam. This guy's not a billionaire. He doesn't. His TV show was a fake. He just wants checks for thousands of dollars from this dude.
Wait, you're thinking about that? That was your impression of Mark Cuban?
Well, he was very pushy about getting those first checks from me. So I thought, oh, wait a second, what am I missing here? This guy's a billionaire. Why is he so invested in this? But it turns out he wanted to be able to talk highly of it in interviews, and I think I was actually the first person to send him a return on any of his Shark Tank investments. So he was, you know, he was boasting about it on radio shows and TV
shows. Oh, really?
Shows, and yeah, it ended up being great for business. So
check you out.
Smart guy.
Yeah. So now you're doing it. So if I wanted you to draw a cat for me, I would say, okay, I'm a radio announcer, I'm a teacher, I'm a plumber, whatever, and I want a cat for me or for my friend who's a teacher or a plumber or whatever, and then you'll with that thumbnail sketch of information, you then hand draw a cat for that person. And by the way, it's not a nuanced, shaded, multicolor spectacular. At least they weren't when you started.
They still aren't.
They're stick figures.
Two-dimensional, pretty much a stick figure.
Like a hangman.
A little color to them.
Yeah,
kind of like a hangman. Circle with triangles for ears.
And people give you $10 for that.
They do. Before I've even drawn anything, I get the $10. For all they know, I'm fleeing with it. But
how long does it take you to draw a cat for somebody?
Yeah, so when I was doing it on paper, sometimes people would wait 6 to 8 weeks because I'd have such a crazy backlog and there was so much involved in shipping these things. But now sometimes they get it in a matter of hours. The time it takes me to draw is probably about 5 minutes tops for the really complicated ones.
Do you feel guilty about this?
No, because you know, there are so many businesses out there that are actually giving people zero for the money they give them. And I'm giving them exactly what I tell them I'm giving them. You know, they're paying $10 for a cat drawing. They know that going in.
Right.
And,
it's not like you
exactly
under-deliver.
No.
It's a cat drawing.
I'm not selling a product and making false claims about what it'll do for your life. I'm very upfront and honest with people. So,
yeah, Steve Bertrand, what were you thinking?
I was just going to say, Steve, it's kind of a funny question coming from a guy who sits on a stool and talks into a microphone.
But I do feel guilty. There's no way I should be getting paid for this.
I talk for a living.
I know. What's that? There's no heavy lifting there. Okay.
So I envy you all, though. I think you guys have an awesome gig. It's wonderful.
We do. So, and you've created some interesting opportunities for yourself. One time, here's the reason you're on the radio. Elif, do I need to pause here? Elif, what's our commercial inventory like? Can we go till 27? Elif, I'm looking at my producer. She said, yeah, keep talking. So Bill and Wendy and Steve Bertrand were talking the other day about credit card or IRS scams and ripoffs. Bill was getting a phone call from somebody he was suspicious about. And the conversation they had went around to, well, does anybody ever try and tease or play the scammer along? So when the friend of the Nigerian prince reaches out to you, do you? And I used to play with these people, but it never went very far. What's your story?
Yeah, so I received an email, one that probably looks like one you all received. But the pitch on this one was this guy wanted me, he's from Nairobi, Kenya, and he was offering his services as a movie maker and a writer, and said that for only $50,000, I could own an interest in this play he was about to write, which was going to make millions of dollars. So I was very interested in that, because here he was at least saying he was a writer, and I knew he wasn't going to get many people biting for $50,000. So I wrote him back and I said, I tell you what, man, I'll give you $50. If you write a play, it has to be to my specification. I'll give you the plot and you'll get $50 for that. And then I'm going to produce that play in Chicago, one of the greatest theater cities in the world. And I'll send you a video of the play you made for me. So he said, okay. And I sent him a plot line that was incredibly convoluted. It filled with a lot of pop culture references that I knew he wouldn't have access to in Kenya. Just this ridiculous story. And he sent me back a play a month later that was just terrible. And not, you know, it was partially terrible because of the ridiculous plot I made him write. But also his command of the English language was very limited. And from that point, we went ahead and produced the play. I put out a legitimate casting call. We got real actors in the city to perform his play verbatim as written, treating it like it was a Mammoth production. And it ended up being great. It was so fun to watch.
It must have worked on both levels, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic to see these actors give, you know, try to wrap their mouths around these impossible lines and, you know, really give it a serious treatment. And he then wrote a sequel for me, and then he wrote a musical for me. He's written a whole web series for me that's yet to be produced.
No kidding.
And my favorite script that he's written for me. So this is right after Shark Tank. I felt like I had some money to spend. I paid him $500 to write a script called The Big Lebowski 2, where he had never seen the movie The Big Lebowski. All he had was my one paragraph description about the first movie, a list of characters, and then he had to write the second movie for
okay,
me.
Okay, before you finish that thought, though, was there anything, was there, I'm thinking of like, Lisa, I'm thinking of a line or was there a moment in the first production, a line or something that was the very essence of what the two of you had created? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is, and I'm digging through my drawer now because I have it printed on a T-shirt.
The line?
The quote is, you know we have all the time in this world than we may think.
You know we have all the time in this world than we may think.
Yes, which was delivered by actor Peter Kremidis very seriously, very passionately, but an absolutely meaningless collection of words that was really fun to to add meaning to.
And you kind of know where he's going with that, but that's not how you say that. So sure. Then he writes you a Big Lebowski?
Yeah, the Big Lebowski 2, the sequel that probably will never get made by the Coen brothers, but we've got the script, and it's also it's a wonderful and terrible read.
Did you ever meet this person in person?
No, he has asked a few times if I would find him a job in the United States and fly him out of Kenya. And I'll be honest, it's really, it's a tricky relationship because I'm trying really hard never to exploit him. He, you know, that first exchange was probably a little bit exploitative because I felt he was trying to exploit me for money. But since then, we've developed a bit of a relationship, and he kind of understands why his stuff has appealed to me. And we've gone back and forth a few times, and we never met in person, but we've definitely sent videos back and forth and have sent emails back and forth as well.
No kidding. So you've laid eyes on this guy. Does he live in a hut? Does he have a house? Does he have a family?
He has a girlfriend and a child, and his latest thing is now he's trying to sell a book that he's written about his life. But I don't know. I don't know what his living situation is like. I know when the mall, there was that big massacre at a mall in Nairobi that was in the news a lot several years ago. And yeah. I checked in on him and he was okay. And yeah, we've maintained a correspondence, but I try to keep him at an arm's length because there's not much I can do to really help him, you know.
Well, and I also think you need to be careful about a friendship, even if your motives are good, with yeah. somebody whose initial outreach to you was to steal from you. Right? I mean, do you think
that... Who knows? Maybe for that $50,000, he would have delivered a return on my investment.
Well, he did it for 50. He did it for 50.
Yeah, he did.
But that said, so I wonder, did he like mass mail those out, and did people send him checks wanting to get in? You know, those things, however preposterous, work. I wonder if he was making money on that scheme.
I think, you know, that one in particular, I'm not sure. My guess is it was one of many that he was sending out yeah. with many different themes. And I would be surprised if anyone bit the way I did. But I saw it as an opportunity to have a little fun. So.
Yeah, right. Right, because maybe people were sending him money, maybe they weren't. But he wasn't writing plays for people. You're the only one that said... I call BS, but yeah, let's do a play anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it was obvious from what he delivered to me that he wasn't really prepared to write a play.
Wait, I got to do what now?
Yeah, he probably Googled how to write a play, and that was, you know, the format of what we got. I had a real dream of producing a documentary. So the third play he wrote for me was a musical, and we never produced that one yet. And I wanted to produce it off Broadway and fly him to the United States to see it and just tell this story of this random encounter is now giving this playwright in Nairobi, Kenya, an opportunity to watch his show play off Broadway. You know, I think it'd be such a cool story, but I couldn't get anyone interested to help me put that together. So never panned out.
I wouldn't give up on that because I would imagine the Hollywood treatment of it or the Broadway treatment could make the play, you know, just enough better than it is, the one that he wrote
right.
for you, that you know, it was sort of a ironic or inadvertent hit, right? And I don't know, there's a movie or a musical in that, if you ask me. I mean, I think it could be a touching story, the redemption of the scammer by the scammy, or I don't know. I'm sure you've thought it through. I think there's a story there. But I've also been told by people who have good story ideas that it's not the idea, it's the people that make the movie or the play. There's a lot of good ideas out there. Those plays still don't just come to fruition because you had a good idea. You need to get lucky and find somebody who has the money and access or is the producer, is the star,
sure.
right? Yeah.
And with all these stick figure cats to draw, who has the time, John? You know, it's also these kids I got to raise, I guess, legally.
How many kids you got? How many kids are you and your wife have?
Who knows? Who knows? No, three of them that I, yes.
What are their ages?
11, 9, and 7 right now. Yeah,
Steve Gadlin,
a handful
from Chicago. All right, Steve, what can we do for you? Thanks for the story. That's a lot of fun.
Of course.
Anything I can do
yeah.
for you these days? I mean, how do I get a stick figure cat if I want one?
Yeah, so I'm still selling them at iwanttodrawacatforyou.com.
That was available, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, if you're on Twitter, it was. Believe it or not, it was.
Imagine that.
The domain was available.
What are the chances?
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at catdrawingguy. And you know what? I've got a bunch of other crazy random projects coming up, and if you follow me there, you'll hear all about them. I'll keep in touch with you, John.
Were you going to tell me about a turkey penis or something like that?
You're close. You're really close. I had a project involving raccoon penis bones for a while
that,
believe it or not, fell flat on its face.
You were selling them, weren't you?
I was trying to. Someone showed me that they were available for 45 cents on some taxidermy website, and I figured if I write a song and make a dance similar to how I did with the cat drawings, that I could sell them for at least 10 bucks a piece. So I bought 1,000 of them and ran a Kickstarter so that it would be I either sell 1,000 of them or I sell 0 of them. It had to be all or nothing.
Yeah.
And as I was getting press and momentum and they were selling, for some reason Kickstarter pulled the plug, and all the momentum fell out, and now I've got a box of 1,000 raccoon penis bones in my office at work. So that's my story. I'm sure you hear this one all the time.
How's that conversation go with your wife? Hey, honey, I got an idea.
Well, that's why they're at work. She wouldn't let me have them shipped home. And the funny thing about where I work is you can't take a box out of the building without it being inspected by security. So they're just going to stay there unless I smuggle them out one at a time in my pockets. But I think I'm content to let them sit in a box in a cabinet.
Always a pleasure talking to Steve Gadlin.
You too, John.
Concludes our conversation today. Stay in touch, Steve, and let us know if you got another project. We'll be happy to promote it, all right?
I certainly will. Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
I want to draw a cat for you, Steve Gadlin. Okay, Steve, I'm sorry to hear that. I wondered what the outcome of that was going to be. By the way, the distance from Rockford to Lincoln is...
Yeah, he took off. He had a car. Of course, it was the hotel was near an expressway or interstate. He bolted out of a window, that was the early reporting, and he was from the Springfield, or is from the Springfield area, so he knew his way south. But yeah, it was a long way.
Yeah, like about a three-hour drive.
Right.
Okay, it's 2:36 on WGN. Steve, interrupt my conversation with any of that news is necessary. We'll continue here now. I'm looking at a story in the New York Times. You know, we have this ongoing conversation. America has a fascination, the planet does, with Donald Trump. And I think sometimes we get too easily distracted by some of the silly, albeit them interesting conversations like, did he hide his high school transcripts? And then some of the things that are more important, but still maybe not that important, like what sort of strings did he pull to get Ivanka and Jared White House clearance? Okay, that's a more important, but is that as important as the things that really affect you and me, like, I don't know, your money? Here's a headline in the New York Times. In a blow to Trump, America's trade deficit in goods hits record $891 billion. And I saw that and I thought, okay, I probably do need to pay a little more attention to this, but it's a little more difficult to do. Anna Swanson is a trade and international economics reporter at the New York Times, and she joins us now on WGN. Anna, it's John. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So first put it in some perspective for us. What does this story mean? What's happened here?
Sure, sure. So the annual numbers came out yesterday for America's trade balance, and it showed, as you said, the trade deficit rising to a record of $891.3 billion. That's the largest number in history. And, you know, just as a refresher, the trade deficit basically is, you know, the difference between what the United States is exporting and what it's importing. So that number is telling us that the United States is importing a lot more than it's exporting.
Right.
Now, you know, economists have a different view on this, but President Trump has talked a lot about this number. He personally tends to see it as a metric for how America's trade is going. And so by his own metric, that number, which rose significantly last year, shows that, you know, perhaps he's not doing very well. I would add a caveat there that a lot of economists don't necessarily agree with him. They don't see the trade deficit as a sort of a scorecard for America's trade performance. But nonetheless, on this measure, it looks like so far the president is failing his own test.
Right. So he made this bed. Now he gets to lay in it. But I could see him legitimately pulling a switcheroo, saying, well, it's not really that important. If we have a deficit, it means people are trying to bring their money into this country, and that's a good thing for us.
You could make that argument, yeah. And, you know, economists say that this larger deficit was driven by many factors, some of which are good, some of which are probably bad, all of which are mostly beyond the president's control. So, you know, U.S. economic strength allows people to buy more goods from abroad. That's just what American consumers have been wanting. You know, outside of the United States, you're seeing some major economies slow down. That slows our exports a bit. You're also seeing the dollar be relatively strong these days. But then also some of Mr. Trump's own measures, his tax cuts did help to push up the trade deficit last year, and I can go into that if you like, and the tariffs themselves. I mean, there's some evidence that they hurt the Chinese economy, and that in turn would have lowered American exports to China.
I notice that your reporting, Anna, says goods, but it doesn't mention services, and that's a bugaboo that some of his critics point to when he talks about numbers, because he includes one or the other, depending on what version of events favors him the most. Is there a reason why services are not in this, and should it be? Does that matter?
Oh, yeah, there were service numbers as well. And once you take into account services, that trade gap is significantly lower. That's because the United States is a big exporter of services. This is an area where, you know, we are doing very well economically. I think, you know, for the president, he really sees economic growth and his mission for the economy to boost manufacturing. And so he is very focused on the goods deficit as a scorecard. It's also somewhat easier for economists to measure. So there is a debate surrounding that, but I don't think that's why the president is focused on it. I think he sees it as a sign of America's manufacturing capacity and
our
economic
might. That's so old school. That's so old school. It's like we make things, we make Chevrolets, and we mine coal, and that's America. And it's like, well, it is, but it's not so much anymore. And I think we're fools if we rely on that when it's much more a service sector economy. So include the services, and then if this number looks dire, tell me if I'm right about this, $891 billion, it's not as bad as that looks, because on the service side, we're doing better than that, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And if you look at a lot of products, for example, you look at an iPhone that might have come to the United States from China, that the whole value of that iPhone, if it did go from the United States to China, will be measured as an export from China to the United States. But there's also a lot of value actually in that iPhone that was created in the United States and that stays in the U.S. as profits. So, you know, all the intellectual property, all the people at Apple who have designed that technology, all the people at marketing firms who are getting paid to market Apple products. I mean, those numbers aren't necessarily reflected in that trade balance, and that is a huge source of jobs and success for the United States.
Anna, the headline of the story is America's trade deficit in goods hits record $891 billion. In fact, it says in blow to Trump. So that's pitched, at least in the headline, like this is a bad thing for the president. Is this a bad thing for America?
Well, I think, you know, the point I wanted to make is that, you know, Mr. Trump has really emphasized this as his own metric. And so, you know, in terms of that scorecard, he is not doing very well. I mean, I think it's kind of a particular irony because it's something that he really cares about.
Yeah.
And, you know, an area where he's not doing well. But, you know, many of his harshest critics don't actually blame him for it, saying that, you know, some of the fluctuations here in the trade deficit are beyond his control. So it's something that he and his supporters care about, but a lot of his critics actually do not.
Well, what does it mean to me if I'm going to Walmart?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to Walmart, look on the shelves, a lot of those goods are coming from China, and that is the reason for that rising trade deficit. I mean, you know, obviously this is hard for American workers because many of these manufacturing jobs have gone overseas, and we have seen the erosion of some of these manufacturing communities across our country because of that. You know, one thing you probably don't notice, though, is all the ways in which the lower value of these products have changed your lives. You know, we are able to get so many more products much more cheaply, and I know, you know, that may not sound like a very good argument when you've lost your job, but millions and millions of Americans are acquiring goods and services much more cheaply than before. And, you know, in economics, they say that the losses are very concentrated and very visible, and the gains tend to be very diffuse and not as visible. But overall, if you add them up, the gains do outweigh the losses. That is economic theory, at least.
So if we did speak with one economic voice, we'd rather have a deficit than a surplus?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think you'd rather have an economy that's growing strongly and people that are able to purchase goods that they want. You know, whether or not that results in a deficit or a surplus is probably somewhat less important.
Yeah, but I mean, so you hate that question, don't you? And
I'm just saying the point I'd like to make is that the deficit or the surplus is basically an outcome of a long process, and what's good to focus on is the process. process that comes before it. You know, is your economy growing strongly? Do you have jobs with good wages? You could have all those things and have a deficit or have a surplus. So, you know, the more important question is, what kind of economy do you want to have?
So there's two schools then, right? The employees who are challenged by some of these imports, that's hard for them. That was your point a moment ago. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us that are going to Walmart, lucky us, right? Because China's able to produce something less expensively. And enough of us have jobs now that we're able to buy those things. So that creates a deficit. But Americans could buy more expensive stuff if they want to, but they don't want to.
Well, that is the way the economy has been going. I mean, Americans have shown through their purchasing choices that, you know, when it comes to looking at the shelves, this is basically what they want. You know, maybe some are realizing this is not what they want, and, you know, that's fine. That's a good reason to buy American. But as you were saying a moment ago there, too, you know, we are buying these goods from China. We were mentioning that, you know, just because a good is coming from China, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not creating employment in the United States, often in services. So the global economy is just very, very integrated these days. And so looking at just the trade deficit in goods can be kind of a misleading practice, is what I'd like to say.
I appreciate that. One last thing for Anna Swanson, who writes about economics for the New York Times, and her piece today is about this trade deficit. But you also mentioned the $1.5 trillion tax cut that the president signed a little over a year ago. I have long worried that that was going to bite us in the butt. Can you just talk a little bit about the impact of the $1.7 trillion tax cut, $1.5 trillion tax cut we all got?
Sure, yeah. So the evidence is that that tax cut has provided a boost to the economy in the short term. It's less clear that there is a long-term economic boost from that, because we're just not seeing, you know, much higher levels of business investment from it. But it also, as these figures are showing this week, appears to have pushed up the trade deficit. And that's something that a lot of people did anticipate. And that's for a couple reasons, both because that tax cut did give Americans more money to spend, and when we spend, we tend to buy more imported goods. The second reason is that it's also largely financed by government borrowing. So when the government borrows money, that encourages capital to flow into the United States from abroad. And just the way, you know, trade and investment flows work, basically, you know, when there's a dollar in, there has to be a dollar out. And so that capital flowing in from abroad results in a trade deficit. It's a little bit, you know, complicated in terms of macroeconomics, but all that money flowing in does result in this trade deficit.
But I thought the tariffs were going to make it more expensive for imported goods, say Chinese goods, to come into the United States. And that was the president's plan to make us more competitive. Is that having an impact?
So the tariffs are starting to have some impact. In some cases, you would see, you know, people have a higher price for Chinese goods and choose to purchase American-made goods instead. But, you know, it seems to have other kind of more paradoxical effects as well. Yeah. So the tariffs, you know, there's some evidence that these actually have hurt the Chinese economy, and the Chinese economy is slowing. You might say to yourself, you know, what's the problem with that? But that in turn may have lowered American exports to China. So, you know, everything is kind of interlinked. If you try to offset those Chinese purchases and direct them to American purchases, you might end up reducing American exports to China as well. And from the data, it does look like there is some of that going on.
You know, the number that scares me the most these days is what's the debt now? Is it $14 trillion or something like that? And we're adding on to that. And if the tax cuts don't generate enough new tax revenue to begin to whittle away at that, here we go again. We're just passing this enormous burden on to our kids and grandkids, you know?
Yeah, the debt has and the deficit have grown quite a lot, and this tax cut is no doubt a major contributor to that, you know, financed largely by borrowing.
So is this a reverse, like, is this the way Democrats always play the game? I thought this was the or Republicans play the game. I thought this is what Democrats did, you know?
That's right. It is kind of flipping the politics of debt on its head. I mean, for so long, Republicans were the party of fiscal responsibility. And, you know, we really haven't seen that in the last couple of years in Washington. We have seen the reverse of that.
Last question. Is this a Reaganomics version of how to attack a debt?
Oh, you mean by like supply side economics or by
yes.
growing out of your debt?
Yes.
Yeah, those arguments are definitely coming back around. You know, and I think that a lot of economists have criticisms about that. I mean, you know, you obviously today in the economy, you're seeing that boost to growth from the tax cuts, but is it big enough to offset the cost of that borrowing? It looks like no, not by a long shot.
It's a really interesting piece with some easy to digest numbers. Anna Swanson's piece is in the New York Times today. She's the trade and international economics reporter there. Anna, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Talking about names earlier in the show today because the president got Tim Cook's name wrong. He called him Tim Apple. And then that thing happened with the five at Fox who got the name wrong when they were talking about the Jesse Smollett and the R. Kelly stories. One of the guys said that in each case it was Robin Roberts who did it. And they go, no, it wasn't Robin that did the other one. It was Gail King over at CBS. But then it got us on to talking about how you remember names and get names right. And somebody texted us. They said, hey, my wife had a student named L and then a dash A. So it looks like L-A or La, but there's a dash in between L-A.
I saw that one. It's trippy.
And the name was pronounced?
La dash A?
Nice.
Nice job.
Close anyway, but I mean, that good try. It was LaDasha.
LaDasha.
LaDasha, because it was La Dasha, so LaDasha.
Who needs letters?
I mean, know.
I think the future is going to be emojis for people.
Well,
today,
that's
so.
It. I mean, isn't that, yeah. I mean, and I am the world's biggest anti-emoji, anti-emoticon person. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to start naming our kids by symbols, I mean, like, it's, you know, I wonder if anybody's used at, you know, the ampersand. I wonder if anybody's incorporated that into a kid's actual birth certificate name.
Might be giving
not.
Kanye some ideas.
Kanye has shown restraint.
Yeah.
Those names for his kids are what? North and
West.
And West. And what else do we have?
Oh, wait. No, West is his last name.
Yeah. It's
North.
Northwest.
Saint.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Saint. And what else?
Is how many does he have?
I think he's got...
Does he have a child before he was with the Kardashians?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Okay.
Not that I know.
Oh, if he did, I feel so bad for that kid because we don't know his name.
Yeah, and
that kid may be the luckiest kid alive in the whole clan.
Well,
and under the
nowhere
radar.
Nowhere near the Keeping Up with the Kardashians show.
Wasn't there a story when it first started that there was one Kardashian that wasn't going to go on television?
Yeah, the brother, Rob. Remember? They were making fun of him. They said he was too overweight and he needed to lose weight before he was allowed.
Christmas cards?
I don't know.
Well, I saw a picture of him with everybody for some holiday thing over the holidays, but then he appeared with Blac Chyna, right? Wasn't that his?
He was with her.
With wife and
sometime.
Or baby
I think
mama?
They had a baby, mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah.
Right. I was so sorry when the Kardashians quit the Christmas card. That was just so... I'm not being sarcastic. I love the Kardashian family Christmas card.
Why?
Because it was just so them. It was just so on brand. It was like, yeah, we're rich. We think we're better than you. Lord knows we're prettier than you. Check it out.
Right.
And then they just wore their best clothes and lounged around their glitter. And I don't know. So I understand your question, but I just thought, maybe it was a hate watch thing. It was just so much fun to...
Do you imagine? I like to imagine this. I like to imagine that back somewhere in Southwest Asia, wherever there are cousins of the Kardashians, also named Kardashian,
mm-hmm.
who are shaving their eyebrows right now and wearing they're wearing just a cloth sack and trying to get it and picking up potatoes somewhere. That's kind of what I imagine.
I'm sorry. What's your point?
My point is that with the cosmetic surgery, amount of money, amount of, you know, these are the Kardashian cousins that are back home, back in the homeland.
Yeah.
They don't have the Instagram. And so they don't get, they're the same. They're probably prettier if you actually, you know, did all the stuff to them that they've done to these people.
Kim walked out on Jimmy Kimmel the other day wearing a like gold lamé dress.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was beautiful, and she was beautiful. But so much has happened to her body that it was the most unusual-looking thing I've ever seen. Everything was just so amplified,
yes,
so pumped up that it looked...
Jessica Rabbit.
It did. That's what it was.
That's what
it
she's
was
become,
so
Jessica
weird.
Rabbit.
Well, they're some of the youngest stars to really celebrate plastic surgery and talk about it. You know, I mean, first of all, they're getting it at a really young age.
Yeah,
I mean, the
18-year-olds
in the family get the plastic surgery. Kylie Jenner talks about her fillers that she plumps into her face.
Really?
Because everyone said she had surgery. She said, no, I didn't have surgery. It's fillers.
How old is Kylie? 21?
I mean, barely. She's the one who just became the Forbes self-made.
Don't say it. You just said it.
She just said self-made.
I think
she followed
self-made.
Me about this. I actually called her out yesterday on television.
I know.
About
well,
this.
Good for you. I missed that.
I did. I called out Anna by name.
Oh, you did?
No, I did.
We were talking about Kylie.
And I said that Anna DeVellante says that because...
She is self-made.
Saying self-made.
You really think she was tirelessly working away, like in her garage, trying to find the perfect makeup for her clients?
I think she designed these eyebrow kits and these different makeup kits. And obviously, I don't know if it's hard or not, but it's certainly taken the world by storm.
But she's sitting in a boardroom designing them with people who do this professionally, right? Because that's how all these celebrity lines get made, right? We have a friend who's got a big celebrity line.
But nobody exists in a bubble. I mean, Estee Lauder has a team of people who do it, right?
But Estee Lauder's not running around screaming, well, Estee Lauder's dead, right? But
the Lauder family.
The Lauder family. I mean, but that at least... The point there was that this 17-year-old when she started, or 16-year-old when she started with this, wasn't doing it, you know, what didn't get her driver's license and, you know, go down to Claire's and start buying little boxes and then mixing. Yeah, but the point is that it's based on the celebrity. It's based on what these guys have done to create this.
I look at self-made as if you inherit a company. So, like, Erin Lauder couldn't say that she's necessarily self-made because she inherited this, you know, great company from her family and it was already there and she just kind of took over the reins.
Kardashian didn't do that?
I don't think she did with her makeup
company. Well, she inherited money,
and
right?
Her name.
And a platform.
And her Instagram followers.
When you think of where she's risen, I mean, it's fun to make fun of the Kardashians, but you think about the power of what they have built. When you look at her Instagram following and her social media following, is enough to power a billion-dollar company.
Right? I mean, so she is a billionaire who started out with $1 million that she didn't. She had a head start, but I'll give her props for doing with it what she did. What do they say about Donald Trump? That the amount of money his father gave him, if he just invested it in the market, it would have done better.
But you don't think there's a group of investors who saw her 3, 4, 5 years ago and were like, jackpot, jackpot.
This is where I disagree with you, because there's no way she could have gotten that production line without seed money.
I don't think she did. I really, if you read the Forbes article about her, it was basically they import from China and they do things on the cheap, but she's basically just cutting out all the marketing costs, which is the major cost of cosmetics, via using social media.
Can't wait to find out there's cat hair in the
Is this what you guys are going to do all day, by the way? Is this it?
Yeah, this is what we're going to do.
It's not
we
bad.
We fight about the Kardashians. It is one of those things on this show that is a constant, like...
It's a driver.
Yeah, it is.
Wedge.
It's a wedge. It is. We sit around and talk about the Kardashians, like, as though they, you know, listen, you can't take away the fact that they have become a noun, a verb, adverb, and an adjective, right? So they become everything. I understand that.
I got to go.
But hold on
you're
one second. John,
you
don't
have to yell at me in my ears.
I didn't know I was going to start a fire. I did not know that this was the fascinating point of contention it is between the
Fine.
Two of you.
I'm not even going to look at her right now. I cannot even look at Anna right now.
John's like at the dinner party, like, I've got to go.